Hey folks, my name is Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table is a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is the podcast edit of something that we do together in person. We just call it the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with you in the hope that it can be a positive contribution and a catalyst for your own exploration, or perhaps something that you share with somebody else you know is exploring what they believe to support and encourage them. In our experience, exploring what you believe can be hard work, exciting, encouraging, but also challenging. And we don't think that anyone should have to do that alone. On a perhaps more personal note, I don't believe that we do it best alone. I think we do it best together with others. We're able to do this work because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond the local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com under the Giving tab. Thanks for dropping by. Welcome to the Talky Bit. We did this thing a couple of weeks ago in our sort of transition to the Talky Bit with our breathing that I want to do again, and then we're going to take it somewhere different than we did last time. So, as always, invitation, not obligation, just participate as you feel able and comfortable. But we did a very simple breathing exercise where the breath in was carried the message, it's okay. And the breath out carried the message to change what you believe. So the sentence was, it's okay to change what you believe. We may or may not believe personally that it's okay to change what we believe. But what my hope for the exercise in this space was to have a shared experience of affirming that in this community, at this juncture, in this moment, it's okay to change what you believe. That's part of your context here. You're in that sort of space. Whether that feels like good news to you or bad news to you or the slippery slope to hell, I don't know, right? That's pretty personal. But that's the space. And I wanted to affirm that. And then I'll explain sort of as we go a little bit more why I chose to start with that exercise. So let's just do three rounds of that in terms of breath in and breath out. Breath in is it's okay. The exhale is to change what you believe. Okay, so be grounded, whatever that feels like for you and your body, and we'll breathe in and breathe out together, and then we'll get into some ideas. All right, here we go. Peace. So I've been getting some mail about the Short History of Hell series. So far, no nasty mail, which I'm obviously pleased about. In fact, it's mostly been very positive. And I think there's a couple of visible reasons for that. One is that if anyone's sort of even remotely been paying attention to our frequently stated reason for being as a community, this kind of a series shouldn't be a surprise. Exploring what we believe is it's why we're here. It's what we do. And the second reason is that there are a lot of folks out there that are hungry for this kind of conversation, but there aren't necessarily very many spaces where you can have it without it rapidly degenerating into something at best unpleasant and sometimes quite nasty. Changing beliefs is hard. And even exploring what we believe can be difficult. It can be disconcerting. It can be disruptive. It can also be exciting, liberating, energizing. And then, of course, just to keep things interesting, it can be all of those things and more, at the same time. So that can be complex. I've been part of this community of exploration for over 15 years. It feels incredible to even say that, but it's true. I've been a student of what it means to explore what we believe for a lot longer than that, decades longer than that. So it might be reasonable to think that, you know, somewhere along the way, I've accumulated some version of expertise in this realm, but it doesn't especially feel that way to me. I've learned a lot. That doesn't feel ambiguous to me. And that doesn't seem to be slowing down. And I would also say, though, that I keep on wrestling with how to best support the experiences that are part of exploring what we believe. And also, I continue to sort of ponder and experiment with how to equip both myself and others to not just somehow get through this as though it were a singular sort of passage once and done, but to do that work of exploring what we believe as well as possible and to, as frequently as possible, see good outcomes from it. That feels like an important space in my life and one that I keep engaging with, I hope fruitfully. And all of that feels like it has become more and more complicated as our wider cultural context and norms have shifted discernibly toward either-or thinking, or at least toward highly visible, technologically amplified either-or communicating. Not the same thing, but they're related. I'm not going to get into the weeds on why that is. I'd like, for the purposes of our time together this morning, to just blame that on the internet and move on. I hope you can appreciate that was both an attempt at humor and an acknowledgement of one significant contributing factor to the trend. However, it has happened, and whatever keeps it going, it's a real aspect of our lived experience, and even if it's a way of operating that we fight not to get sucked into, we're still liable to be impacted by it. So in my own wrestling with how to best explore what I believe and how my beliefs are changing, and motivated by my desire to support other people in that same journey, I'm always looking for ideas and tools that I think or hope might be helpful. And I recently came across an idea that feels like it's in this category and that really resonated with me. It comes from the work of an academic named Dr. Barry Johnson. If you look this guy up and you find his books, I should mention that he's not that easy to read, which doesn't mean the ideas aren't good, but, you know, anyway, just forewarned, forearmed, if you want to go to the sources on this. The overarching idea that Johnson is working with, he called polarity management. And what I want to do today is introduce us to the concept, and then I want to apply it sort of in a 30,000-foot, very general kind of way to the process of considering conflicting beliefs. Because it's a good fit for that. And now, as with any tool, and this is a tool, this needs to not be the only thing in our toolkit. And we'll consider some other options for exploring what we believe in terms of actual tools and skills in a future talkie bit. But for now, I want to start here. So polarity management as a way of thinking is a tool that can help us deal with ongoing tensions that have no permanent solution. When we use polarity management as a tool, we're dealing with tensions that have better or worse ways of being held in balance, but they're not solvable in the either-or sense. And the whole idea is predicated on what I think is an interesting distinction, which I've sort of touched on but haven't expanded. I'll do that in a moment. And that's the difference between a problem and a polarity. So I want to make a distinction there. Problems, as they're defined within this particular system of ideas, are challenges that can be solved and then set aside. So that's the working definition in this system of thought for a problem. We can deal with them, we can resolve them, we can move on. That's a problem, all right? Polarities are recurring tensions where both sides offer real value. If it hasn't become obvious already, or if we don't already carry this as something that's obvious, let me just say it so it's in the room. This is a really hard idea to live with because it's built on the notion that we are going to look at something that behaves like a polarity and see value in the poles, the opposite aspects of that comparison. And for most of us as human beings, that's just really hard to do. It comes with all sorts of sense of what's at stake and of conflicting values, and just there's a lot of freight that comes with this kind of work. So let's just kind of name that so it's in view. The idea here, if we're dealing with recurring tensions where both sides offer real value, is an idea that's built, and Johnson's work is built on the notion of balance. All right? So if one side of these polarities is overused at the expense of the other, it creates an imbalance. And the goal of polarity management is not to choose a side. That's not what the system is there to help us do. It's there to help us learn how to manage the tension over time so that we can harness the benefits of both, in this model, both poles. Okay, the values that we see at the poles of the tension. if that sounds like an improbable exercise to you, and it really might, let me just suggest a couple of things. First of all, I think it's important for us to consider, I've touched on it, but let me reinforce it. I think it's important to consider how pervasive either-or thinking is. And I said these days in my notes, and I mean something particular by that, but of course there's nothing new about either-or thinking. One of my culture mentors used to say that when it comes to culture and a relationship between culture as an idea and us as humans, that our relationship with culture is like fish in water. We're surrounded by it. We take our life from it, but we are not it. We're distinguishable from what we're surrounded by. And in fact, and this is where the fish and water metaphor runs out of runway. Let's just mix the metaphors liberally, shall we? Where this ceases to work well is the fact that we make culture. So we're in it and we make it. There's a both and going right there, right? So as long as we're not being binary, there's a good one. We're in the thick of it. So that's the first thing. If that feels like an improbable thing to do, what I've already described, just think about how surrounded we are by not that. That's important. And a second thing to keep in view, I think, is the possibility that unless something changes, nothing changes. I know that's just like horribly obvious when you say it out loud, but we often get stuck somewhere right around this point where we can see that something needs to change, but for a variety of reasons, we don't or we can't act to make a change. We can't get moving on it. We're stuck. We're having an experience of feeling like, yes, but with it. So as you're able, I would encourage you, all of us, the encouragement is not from me to you, it includes me. Let's keep an open mind as we consider this as we're able. I think this system of ideas represents one way of operating that can kind of potentially seep into our everyday lives to help positive changes start to happen. There's nothing magical about this, but there is something useful about it, potentially. So let me give you an example of how this idea sort of behaves in the real world from something that we're all familiar with. We did it just a few moments ago. One of our common practices here at the table is some form of mindful or meditative breathing. It's part of most of our gatherings. So let's do this together. We're going to take a moment and we're going to slowly inhale and then we're going to slowly exhale. There's no idea that goes with this, just the physical experience. Okay, and we'll just do one breath. So just a big breath in and a big breath out. Okay, here we go. Breath in. Breath out. You just engaged in, among other things, a natural polarity. Inhaling and exhaling are very different from one another, but they're not opposing sources in a conflict. They're partners in a rhythm. Again, it sounds a little stupid when you say it out loud, but go ahead and try to just favor one. Right? You're going to be in trouble in very short order. Balance is the key. That's the way a polarity works when it works as it best can and when it's in balance. I once heard a palliative care physician explain the energy aspect of this balance by noting that when someone stops breathing, one has to understand that they have run out of the necessary energy to exhale. And I mean, I've got some training in physiology and emergency medicine and all of that. But until I heard her explain the physiology of this, I still had this idea in my head that it was the loss of energy to inhale that ran out. Because when we get the wind knocked out of us, that's when we feel like we're dying until we inhale, right? Like breath, breath, breath in, breath in. I'm back. But the way it works is that it's the balance of energies that's the key. And in this case, once we've exhaled, our body wants to fill the vacuum, and that provides the energy for the inhale. It's all connected. Breathing isn't something we fix once and move on from. It's a dynamic balance that we manage continuously. So if we're looking for a lived, embodied illustration of polarity management, of keeping things that sound and feel like opposites but are actually meant to be in balance with one another in view, we could think of breath that way. It's the wisdom of the body. If you want, it's the perfect polarity. Inhale, exhale. It is also, I would say, conveniently, an example and a reminder that we always have with us. right? So if we're in a situation where we're dealing with something that strikes us as a polarity, and we'll define that a little more as we go here, breath in, breath out is good for us for all sorts of reasons, psychologically, physiologically, neurobiologically, and also ideologically. It can remind us of an idea like this if that's one we find helpful. We could get into the deeper theory of all this, but I want to shift to applying the basic concepts that we've already talked about to how we might approach conflicting beliefs, which is something that I think we quite naturally encounter as soon as we start to explore what we believe. It's, I mean, maybe just generally, but also I think it's built in to exploring what we believe. And what we want to keep in view as we do this is that our goals, when we apply a tool like this, are things like deeper understanding, reduced polarization, and more constructive dialogue. If those are not things that we're after, wrong tool. So we just need to remember that. We're not trying to solve or eliminate a conflict when we use a tool like this. We're trying to honor and integrate the value of both sides of a recurring tension. All right, so that's an important thing to have in view. And another sort of, I think, short but important sidebar, just a reminder that, as with any tool, this isn't the solution to everything. Sometimes you need a hammer, sometimes you need a scalpel, sometimes you need to lift weights, sometimes you need a massage. I mean, polarity management is the tool that you reach for when both sides offer something valuable. When a particular debate or dynamic is showing up over and over again, and when one side winning is likely to create new problems later. So if you want three checkpoints for is this the right tool, there they are in order, all right? When both sides offer something of value, when a particular debate or dynamic shows up over and over again, and when one side winning is likely to create new problems later. So if you need a little checklist for is this the right tool for the job, that's your checklist right there. So with those qualifiers in mind, let's just take the method and explore what it looks like to apply it if we're exploring what we believe and we're running into conflicting beliefs. So we might reasonably surmise from the language itself, polarity management starts with identifying the poles that we're managing. Now, if you're not tired of the word management yet this morning, you know, like brace yourself, we're not done. But the reason I mentioned that is because this is a certain lens on this. And it's very Eurocentric. It's very built on a particular way of looking at all of the world and how you navigate it. And there are so many other ways to look at the world and how you navigate it. And so if you feel like you're getting tired of the management aspect of this, that's just the thing naming itself. It helps us keep the tool in the right part of the box. All right. If you grew up around ideologies that did not feature either or, that did not privilege the rational over sort of everything else, for instance, this might sort of feel like, why would you put yourself through that? You don't have to do this, right? But lots of us did grow up around that, and so a tool like this might be helpful. So we're starting with identifying the poles that we're managing. Just for our purposes, let me give you some examples of conflicting beliefs, and what we're watching for in these examples are things that we could call interdependent values, okay? So we're watching for values from both poles that are essential to the task, very particular application here, values from both poles that are essential to human meaning-making. So both poles of whatever we're considering have something of value to contribute to the wider human task of making meaning, which is pretty potent stuff. Right? I think we all do it. I think it's actually the thing that we have in common more than anything else as human beings. That's a personal take on that. But in this system, we're watching for interdependent values. So values that are essential to that human meaning-making task, they're different. So the values differ from one another. But they need one another for balance. So that's what we're watching for. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of name the polarity that we're working with, and then I'm going to summarize the value of one pole and then the value of the other, and I'll sort of show us what that looks like, okay, when we're done. So the polarity, let's just pick one. The polarity I'm going to start with is faith, and the versus, the other pole is reason. Okay, so faith versus reason. So one pole, the faith pole, one of the values there is trust in spiritual or religious truth. Faith sort of features that as a value. Reason, on the other side, on that pole, features trust in logic, science, and empirical evidence. So those are our poles in faith versus reason. In tradition versus progress, on the tradition side, that pole features the value of preservation of sacred rituals, identity, order, right? Tradition is strong on those things. Progress features values like openness to new interpretations and evolving understanding, right? So that's a way to illustrate that, a polarity like unity versus diversity. On the unity side, we have the strength of a universal spiritual truth, lots of common ground. On the diversity side, we find strengths like respect for pluralism, different paths, worldviews. A polarity like certainty versus mystery. On the certainty side, we get things like doctrinal clarity and convictions. We can say what we believe with real clarity. On the mystery side, we get values like embracing the unknown and spiritual ambiguity. So these are not, in the model we're working with this morning, these are not problems to be solved. They are polarities to be managed. All right, so that's a shift. So how do we apply that? So what happens if we plug polarity management into this? So this is the part where we actually outline and apply the method or the practice to the polarities that we just identified. And I'll keep working with those same ideas. So as we might expect, as soon as we start to apply this way of thinking to those kinds of poles of ideas, right away we start to add some nuance. That's good. We also start to add some tension. That might not feel good. It's important to acknowledge it because it comes with the process, right? And it's not necessarily a bad thing unless we are not actually using the right tool. If we're in it to win it, just put this tool back in the box. This is not the right one, right? If by win we mean defeat the other pole. So we just got to always keep that in view. So I'm going to take us through this process step by step. It's not that arduous. There's only four steps. They build quite logically on one another. And then once we've got the outline in hand, I'll show us an example of what it looks like applied to one particular polarity, the one that we've named as traditional versus progressive belief. So I'll give you the method first, and then I'll plug it into an example, okay? So step one here is identifying the core polarities. So if we're going to apply this tool in our own lives, we're going to actually use it for something. Step one is we have to go, what are we talking about? What are we considering here? What are the polarities? So we got to name them. And a good way to do that is just to start by recognizing that what the beliefs are that are in tension with one another. Okay, so don't recognize them as mutually exclusive options. That's an important starting point, and that's already difficult, right? We're not talking about things that are exclusive from one another. We're talking about ideas that are going to behave in this model as complementary truths. So let me give you an example of that. So a traditional Christian might hold to the divinity of Christ, and they might also respect the value of Buddhist mindfulness practices. Right? We could regard those things as enemies of one another, or we could regard them as complementary truths, growing from different values. An atheist might value rational skepticism, and they might also acknowledge the role of spiritual community in human flourishing. So that's step one. Identify the core polarities. Step two is map the polarity. This sounds kind of technical, but when you actually see it done, you'll realize it's like making a pros and cons list. It's not that complicated. So as I mentioned, I'll show us an example of this a bit later. We'll actually see it on the screen. So polarity map helps us visualize a few different things. It helps us visualize the upside of pole A, in this case, traditional faith. So if we're making a map of this, we're kind of going, what are the upsides of pole A, traditional faith? Well, there are things like community, identity, purpose, timeless wisdom, or at least enduring wisdom. Want to be careful with our absolutes, right? So that's an upside of pole A. Downside of pole A, traditional beliefs, things like dogmatism, intolerance, resistance to change. So we've kind of identified the edges of one pole here. So we're expanding the circle. You can sort of see what's happening. So then we go to pole B, which in our example is progressive belief, or that's personal. If we wanted it to be between groups, then we would be talking about something like interfaith dialogue. So what are the upsides of that value set? Well, things like openness, inclusion, innovation, right? Good stuff. Downsides are things like relativism, fragmentation, loss of anchoring tradition. Not so desirable. So that's what we do in the process, right? We just go, what are the upsides of both poles? So we're starting to use polarity management within the poles, not just between the poles already. All right, so that's step two. Step three, we want to recognize overuse risks. So again, inhale, exhale. What we're looking for here is what happens if we're all just inhaling the same thing? We're never exhaling its balance in terms of ideas. What happens to the way this behaves? So when we're thinking about this step, at least when I am, I find it helpful to return to that metaphor of breathing and the balance of inhaling and exhaling. So over-focusing in this model on one pole leads to negative consequences. So if we're over-focused, in our example, too much on tradition, that can lead to exclusion or oppression. Not that hard to see. If we focus too much on openness, that can lead to loss of coherence, loss of spiritual depth. It's mush. So that's what we're doing when we're recognizing overuse risks, okay? Sort of as simple and as complicated as that. And then the fourth step is to design early warning signs and figure out what our action steps look like. So this is all very pragmatic in the end, again, management. So when we're doing this, early warning examples here might be things like we're watching for when beliefs become rigid or dismissive of other people's values. So we might be like, on either pole, that would be a warning sign, wouldn't it? It's like, yeah, not the goal, is it? What would an action step look like? Well, like encouraging mutual learning spaces or encouraging and supporting or participating in interfaith dialogue. If it's in the personal front, personal reflection that honors both conviction and curiosity, for example. Sort of an internal potential complement, but also polarity. We've all probably experienced some version of that where we're like, I am really curious about this, and also I have a belief, and they're having a collision, experiencing cognitive dissonance or lived dissonance or, you know, wherever it's showing up for us, right? So I feel like at the table, we live constantly with this. I hope productively, not always, I expect. That'd be something if we always got this right. So what does that look like plugged into some, you know, real-world examples? So if we think about this as dialogue between groups, so let's think about what does it look like if we apply this kind of thinking to interfaith dialogue? Well, using polarity thinking in that kind of a situation can help us to honor both uniqueness and commonality. Balance again, right? I feel like I've got beep, beep. When I was working my way through this, I'm like, Tim, you're really spending a lot of your time and energy on commonality. Is that a bad thing? No, but watch for balance, right? What does it look like to champion uniqueness as well as commonality? I don't want to champion uniqueness if the unique person is different than me. Thank you very much. Because they're an idiot. Did I say that out loud? I can always edit it. I'll leave it in as a confession, right? There's a danger there, isn't there? This is hard work all the way along. It really is. So if I keep thinking about interfaith dialogue and how this might be of benefit, it might help me avoid something like false unity. All paths are the same. No, they're not. Like to argue that all paths are the same is really to significantly diminish the value of the differences of those paths. It's really a lesser outcome. Or might help me avoid the trap of supremacy. Only my path is true, right? So again, similar problem, but a different expression. And instead, thinking like this can help me to embrace the polarity and think something like we're different, okay? And we can still deeply respect and learn from each other. Again, not the tool for every job, right? For us to use this tool, we have to perceive that there is value in both the poles. If we don't, not the right tool. So if we plug that same way of thinking into personal belief systems, it can help us navigate internal tensions like devotion versus doubt, which are often portrayed as enemies. Spent a few years working with Steve Bell, singer-songwriter Steve Bell, and did a bunch of different things together with Steve, but one of the things that I did as part of his staff was I did some design work for him. And if you ever look at Steve's Devotion album, if you're a Steve Bell fan, that was one of mine. And the picture that I chose for the front cover, and Steve's a very creative guy. If you're going to be his designer, you better be ready for revisions right till the end. And I'm not talking out of school here. We've had this conversation between us many times. But that picture is of a person chasing a hat that's blowing down the street. All it has is this picture of this guy chasing his hat and the word devotion on it. And we agreed, that's what devotion looks like. It doesn't actually look like the enemy of doubt. It looks like chasing something, kind of sometimes pretty ephemeral, but we often heard it framed, right, as poles. So this way of thinking can help us navigate an idea like devotion versus doubt or ritual versus spontaneous expression or spiritual experience versus rational understanding. It's a kind of process that can encourage spiritual maturity that embraces paradox and complexity instead of binary thinking. But it's a pretty binary starting portal, isn't it? In fact, it sort of emphasizes the extremes, but from a different perspective. We're not trying to eradicate one or have it win over the other. We're trying to find the balance between them. So to sum this up, let's take a quick look at what this looks like mapped. I'm going to apply this to our example as a framework for respecting and leveraging the value of differing spiritual beliefs instead of trying to eliminate or resolve the tension. So when we actually map this, we can see sort of the whole process there, right? So this is focusing on spiritual belief tensions and how to manage them. It's a typical polarity map structure. There's two poles, upsides, downsides, early warning signs for when things are getting out of balance, and strategies for maintaining a healthy balance. So this is all the stuff that we've talked about, but laid out in what's called a polarity map for the polarity of traditional or certain beliefs on one pole and progressive or open beliefs as the other pole. That's what I mean about the pros and cons list, right? So that's what it looks like if we actually kind of do the work. And I think those are, well, they're not done, but I think they're good starting points. If we think about tradition and certainty as having the values, positive values of clear identity and purpose, cohesive community, anchoring wisdom and rituals, moral clarity, and pole B, progress and openness, having upsides like inclusion and pluralism, adaptability, innovation and practice, respect for diverse worldviews. Downsides on the tradition and certainty side. So this is what shows up when we overuse it, when we always breathe in and not don't breathe out, if you will. Dogmatism and rigidity, exclusion of differing views, resistance to necessary change, suppression of questioning. Overuse of progress and openness, relativism and loss of meaning, fragmented or incoherent worldview, lack of spiritual depth, disconnection from heritage. We could fill in lots of others, but those I think are reasonable examples. Early warning signs of overuse, if we're overusing tradition and certainty on the one side, our beliefs tend to become intolerant or absolute. And this is interesting because I like the combination of tradition and certainty here, because progress and certainty are not antonyms. They're not opposites, right? We can be just as dogmatic about openness as we can about closedness. That's a perspective on belief, no matter how we name it. So early warning signs, our beliefs becoming intolerant or absolute. We become dismissive of others' traditions, suppression of doubt or innovation. And that's sort of archetypally or stereotypically associated with things like tradition and certainty. On the progress and openness side, early warning signs might be things like all beliefs seem equally valid. There's no grounding beliefs. There's nothing sort of beyond whatever inclusion looks like. Neglect of community cohesion, because any given community can only absorb so much variance, in my experience. Avoidance of commitment or spiritual depth. We're not going to, don't lock me in. And then action steps on the tradition or certainty side, create spaces for respectful questioning, encourage historical reflection and humility, and engage with the other in community. That second one, encourage historical reflection and humility, that's a personal favorite. Maybe because I appreciate learning from history, but in my experience, I can't actually take history seriously without being humbled by it. It has a way of assailing my behavioral conviction that I'm righter than someone who came before me. It pretty aggressively assails that. And that, if I'll let it, that'll teach me some humility. And that's helpful. All right. So we've already kind of talked about avoiding the traps of things like only my way or all paths are the same, polarity trap, practicing something where we're different and we can still learn from one another. And in personal spiritual growth, this kind of practice can help me recognize internal polarities like devotion versus doubt, ritual versus spontaneity, mystery versus rationality. The goal, and I'm going to leave us here to reiterate, the goal of applying a tool like this to exploring what we believe is not to resolve these tensions, it's to cultivate conviction and curiosity. It's to promote dialogue over division. It's to foster spiritual maturity through integration, not elimination. And of course, in this context, I offer it to us as a potential tool to assist us as we keep on exploring what we believe. That was pretty teachery, wasn't it, for our context? But I think that's not a bad thing in the mix either in terms of balance. So I commend that to you as having some good potential in certain circumstances. Pay attention to step one, which is does what I'm working on as I explore what I believe here, is this a moment for this tool? And if it kind of meets those criteria, then that's worth exploring and seeing if maybe that's something to plug in and work your way through. All right. Peace.